Stevie Barr.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you very much. Thank you for doing this little video with me.
Don't be silly. Come on now.
So nice to see people's faces. One of the opportunities that comes out of this weird, unique situation that we, you know, you just grab it by the horns and go, do you know what? You know, let's have a chat. Let's do it publicly on a video. So, much appreciated. Do you mind anybody watching this now? Because it's going to go up on YouTube, if that's all right with you, Stevie.
Yeah, of course it is. Although, I mean, as I say, like,
that's all right. Yes. I've been thinking, oh, do you know what? We're all in the same place. So,
yeah.
You know, back bedroom and all that. I've got found a banner, stuck that up, cover it up a little bit. we are linked through, I know we originally met through Sarah Morelli and the spinning group at the International Fitness Showcase, but then more so the connection through biomechanics coaching and IMU Freelian, biomechanics trainer and the IBA. And so anybody who's watching this, who are you? What do you do?
Well, my name's Steve Barr. I am a biomechanics coach. I am also predominantly, that's good. And so I am a nutritionist as well. What else? I work in finance but indoor cycling, that's the thing really, I suppose, that kind of started me off and all of that, and that's still the thing that I do most of all. 58 years old, as you can tell by the, you know, the grey mop or the white mop.
You look really well, actually. You do. You're still teaching then. How is the lockdown? Because you've got a normal job, haven't you, as well?
Yeah.
And then you teach. So you've got a normal 9-to-5 and you're still working, my understanding is. Has that been affected? Your indoor cycling, are you doing that online? How are you getting on with everything in lockdown?
No, my whole fitness thing's gone because I don't have the facilities to do online.
Right.
My own bike is not at my home, and I just don't have the room to do it.
Right.
So the indoor cycling's gone, and the other thing that I was doing was a couple of little kettlebells classes in the office, so kind of corporate thing. And obviously, we're all working from home, so that's kind of gone as well. Although next Friday, I've been asked to do a lunch. Time fitness session for a group of people that in the office, so that might be a wee start of something that might get a little bit more regular, we'll see.
Yeah,
but other than that, no, but my fitness thing is gone. I've just, you know, I'm just doing my own thing to keep myself ticking along.
Yeah, and I think when you talk about that kind of going into the desk, because I did an IMU Freely session for a big bank globally, so 170 people across Hong Kong, Asia, Americas, UK as well. And I think that's where it fits so well, that I Move Freely side of things is, and I think one of the important parts of our duty as exercise professionals and experts in movement is being able to let people know we're here and then offer our service to help unburden the NHS, you know, I've talked about it, the more strongly I feel about that, because the burden on the NHS isn't going to give up quickly. And so what we can do in helping people's movement, desk-bound workers who are still working from home, maybe like yourself, and then obviously they're pulling in somebody like you to help them move better. So how did that come about? How did they find you? Was it somebody you knew or a business you worked with?
I basically put something up on the company internet and in my office to say, look, you know, I can, if anybody's interested, do a little kettlebells class, a little express class at lunchtime. We don't have room for many people, only half a dozen or so people. And yeah, we got some people taking that up. So I've been doing that since turn of the year, maybe, something like that. And one of the girls who comes along emailed me last week to say, look, one of the groups that she's involved with, of colleagues in the office, they're looking to get a little lunchtime fitness thing going. Would that, you know, because I did the kettlebells thing, would I be interested in doing it? Yes, I would. Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh,
And so, yeah, we've got it set up. We're going to do it on Zoom, and it's going to be next Friday lunchtime. The invitation's already going out, or they will go out tomorrow. And as I say, hopefully that's maybe something that I can get to do a little bit more regularly, because strangely, working from home has given me less time than I had before.
How's that happened?
Yeah, because my stepson's a swimmer, and I take him to the pool half five on a Monday, half five on a Wednesday. It's 7 o'clock on a Wednesday night, 5 o'clock on a Friday night, and half five on a Saturday morning. That's all dead time. So it's all learning time for me. My laptop out, and I get my subjects going. That's where I catch up on all my admin, and that's about, I don't know, 14 hours a week maybe. In order to keep that going, I'd have to get up at 4:30 in the morning, which is a normal thing for me. And the other thing is as well, working from home for me personally is hugely more tiring than being in the office.
I agree.
I spend more time at the job than I would do if I was in the office. And it's just physically exhausting sitting here with a little 13-inch laptop hooked up to a 32-inch TV screen and trying to do the same job as I was doing before, which is two screens and all singing, all dancing, internet type thing. So, yeah, I'm finding time management is a really crucial thing here.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people who are finding it ergonomically, it's a challenge because you're on dining table chairs, you've got family members around, you've got distractions, you can't kind of like, right, go to work, do your job, stop work, go home. It's almost like it blends in a bit more. And I have to go out the house and get some fresh air, have a little walk. Otherwise, I can just sit and just, you know, or make a time. Right, now I'm going to do IMU freely. Now I'm going to go in the garden and do some weights and almost still have a schedule. I agree. I think you're right. But so has your day job, it's the same, but you're just working at home?
Yes. It's practically identical.
Right.
There's little difference from me doing my actual job at home than that it would be in the office, except that I don't have the same team of people around me. Yeah. But we're all on WhatsApp, we're all on Instant Messenger. You know, you've kind of got that accessibility, but it's not the same as the physical contact with people.
Yeah.
And I'm somebody who bounces off that physical contact, and that makes a big difference to me. So I find the working from home thing weird, because I'm used to just talking over the desk. Did you do that? I'll get that one. Yeah, don't worry about that one. We sorted that yesterday.
Yeah.
Whereas you're having to type that out and then wait for the response. And, you know, it's that kind of remote. It's that remote thing, you know.
Yeah.
It's strange, but it works. It does work.
So in terms of the sort of your fitness profession and your expertise and your skill in indoor cycling, IMU Freely, biomechanics coaching, kettlebells, it sounds like you've not had much of an opportunity to convert it online and sort of face the kind of, you know, I guess what some of the people I've been speaking to, you know, they're now running 8 classes a week and they're, you know, Zoom experts and, you know, so how has it felt for you? I mean, I'm guessing that's not a good thing for you, right? Are you missing it? And
It's really, really weird, because I'm heavily involved in indoor cycling. I mean, I've got I'm probably involved in sort of 3 or 4 forums. I'm an ambassador for an indoor cycling app. And I produce a profile a week for that app, which is published and it kind of goes global and all that kind of thing. So I'm still doing that, even although I'm not able to actually do the classes or anything,
yeah.
Because, well, when we go back, we're going to need profiles to run, and so I'm just keeping myself ahead of the game and making sure that I'm still keeping in contact with all the people I would normally do. So I still go in and look at the forums and answer the questions and offer opinions and you know, look at people's online classes and sort of, wow, look, at these are really great. You know, how did you manage that and what did you do there? So I'm keeping myself going with all of that.
Yeah.
Kettlebells I'm using every other day, so I'm doing a little half-hour session, just enough just to keep everything ticking over. It's always a hobby's not quite the word for it, but it was always a secondary thing for me because of the main job. And the idea, obviously, as you're aware, was to gradually ease myself from one to the other because I've only got 2 years to retire. And so that was the idea with the kettlebells, to try and get that interest, to try and then get a little bit of my freely interest going, and then gradually just start aiming towards clients. Because with the movement and exercise and nutrition as a little package, then I've got something to offer my target, I feel like. So that's always going to be a gradual thing anyway. So it's not stopped. I'm still picking away in the background. I'm still picking up little bits of knowledge and pain and CPD for various things. So the plan is still the plan. It's still the same.
Good. And what I'm asking everybody is, and obviously because you're not as involved as you were, and other people are kind of like as involved but in a different way, how much from what you've seen do you think this may or may not, it might not, change the industry long term? Do you think it will change the industry long term? Or do you think it will take a period of time and then we'll go back to how we were 2 months ago? And what do you think that would look like?
I think that people have been given a little bit of a wake-up call in a way that, because they've been so confined and they're not used to doing the things that they normally took for granted, being out and about, being able to go and walk here and cycle there and visit the park or go to the gym, you know, that has been taken away from them. And there has been, not panic, but there certainly has been a lot of, can I go online? Can I find a class online? Do you do online? I think the landscape's going to change. I think the online offering won't be as big going forward as it is at the moment, but it'll be bigger than it was, because people will still find the convenience from it. But I think the one-to-one thing is going to explode.
Yeah,
I think the one-to-one thing is going to explode. People will be so glad of that personal interaction, that personal, what's the word I'm thinking of? That personal, it's like touch point that they can have a person right in front of them who can say to them, you know, if you just, you know, that's brilliant what you're doing there, but just if you did that to it, that would be perfect. And they'll get, I think that the one-to-one thing's going to explode going forward.
I agree. And I think, again, it kind of brings back this idea that as sort of movement experts or professionals or whatever we call ourselves, human movement practitioners is probably a better term. I think we have a duty of care to look ahead in terms of, you know, okay, we're here right now, but then plan for that in the future and how it might be different. I think people are going to have, the industry's always got fads, you know, and there's, okay, everyone's online, and then, you know, it's going to get boring. All the free stuff will get boring. People will want to start paying for the online, and then they'll want to go face-to-face or a combination of it. And I think there are trends, but I think for us, trying to sort of see ahead and stay in the game and be ready, I think that's so hard because there is nothing to compare this to. So nobody can say, oh, well, in 2008, you know, which is what it's being compared to, which was just the economy. We're talking health crisis. The whole world's on lockdown. That's a completely different ball game. Yes, we're going to have this economy issue, but like you say, long term, how does that change the whole industry? And I'm with you. I think it's going to be, but I don't know what it's going to look like in the one-to-one, is that bit going to change as well? Yeah, I think they're going to want one-to-one, but does the actual service look different? Does the skill of the practitioner look different as well? Do you think everyone's going to be smarter, more switched on, more educated?
I think that you don't have any choice in that. Because the way this has gone the last few weeks, people have realised there is so much out there, and it is good and also not so good. And people will be looking for the movement specialist, the personal trainer, whatever they decide that they want to go looking for, who can offer them the most based on what it is that they're actually looking for, though. So if they go to a personal trainer who knows a little bit about nutrition, but really their main, they really want to work on their healthy eating habits and get that under control. If that person's not on the ball, they'll leave them quickly. Same with exercise, I think, as well, particularly with movement and exercise. If you can show them actually that you don't need to be all singing and dancing, you can use simple things. You actually don't have to use anything at all. You can use your own body to move. It doesn't have to be prescribed movement. You can dance about. Dancing about is movement. You know, if that's what you like, then you go knock yourself out and I'll show you how to do it. I'll show you how not to injure yourself, perhaps. If you do get an injury, then we can talk about it and we can work through that. But I think that's what it's going to be, is the person who can give them what they're looking for. And that might take a little bit of work for each client to find the right person. But when you find them, they'll find that there'll be a huge amount of loyalty to that person because they'll deliver what they're asking for. There'll be no more sort of, I come into this person, they weren't that great, but I stuck with them. If you're not that great, they'll drop you very quickly because they know that there are loads of people out there who are very, 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 very willing to get involved. But it's finding them is the thing. And I think as movement specialists, that's where we come right into it. Because we don't promise anything. We don't say, come to me in 6 weeks, I'll have you doing this, that, the next thing. We just say, we'll help you move better. Is that not a great thing? Moving better. You like to dance? No, we can help you move better so that you can dance as long as you want to dance. You know, is it football, is it golf, whatever it is that you do, we'll help you move better.
And I think as well, with you saying that, people are being exposed, professionals, we're getting exposed far more now, and we're being seen more, which is a good thing, but it also exposes more flaws in terms of quality of delivery and, you know, skills. And I think where we might have perceived someone, so-and-so does kettlebell girls, I've never been, I don't know what they're like, they're any good, yeah, they're all right, you know. I think everyone's really now so visible that they're going to see, even if theirs is a good coach, and then they see someone and think, wow, that's special, you know. Yes. And so I totally agree. I think there's going to be a difference in the pricing structuring, obviously, but I do think we're getting exposed.
Well, you see, that's really interesting that you say that, because that's the one thing that I haven't been, is I haven't been exposed like everybody or a lot of people. And actually, I was talking to somebody about this the other day. It's the first thing I'm going to do when I get the opportunity is I'm going to film a class. I'm going to find out what I actually am like in somebody else's eyes, not in mine. And I know I'm going to be exposed because, you know, the first time you do that, you realise you pick out yourself all your annoying, really annoying habits that you don't think that you do, but you do. And I know that it's not going to be a wonderful experience. It's going to be a big, big learning experience because I haven't been exposed, but I have to be exposed. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I think I've learned that. I've filmed myself for years, and you know, when I did micro teaching, when I did my teaching qualification years and years ago, and watching myself back, even doing my aerobics, my access to music in 1997 on a VHS tape. It might have been, VHS, I think, and just cringe. But I think, I think it's important, and I think, but at the same time, back then, if you were in public on video, it was a much bigger deal. Whereas now it's like, you know, you want to be polished somewhere. Now it's like, you know, I'm in a back bedroom, you know, like you say, it's just, it is what it is. And people are doing aerobics classes in front rooms. They're doing kettlebells in the garden. They're using water bottles, you know. So I think there's a certain amount of like, there's more opportunity to connect and show that we're human. We're real people. We're like you, you know, we use a water bottle to do bicep curls or whatever it is. So yeah. I think that's a good thing.
Yes, it has to be. Because there has been this impression, I think, in the past, and it's still a little bit relevant, where people think that the coaches are, maybe a little bit special, when actually they're just the same. They just happen to like doing that for you. They like to coach. They like to be involved in that. They like to put across some knowledge that they think that you can benefit from. But they're not special. I mean, when I'm doing my classes, I make mistakes all the time. They just don't know that I'm making mistakes. Yeah. It might be, I had meant to use a particular cue. I forgot to use it, but I used another one. That's a mistake. I didn't use the one I intended to use. Yeah. But, so we're human. We're not special. But what we are is we are concerned about the people that we work with. We want to give them the best experience. You know, we want to give them the best of our knowledge and all the things that we've learned. If they're interested in it, then we want to get that across to them in the best and most it's just the most personable way that you can,
I think honest, because I know, yeah. I've had people come to me time later and they say, well, I wasn't going to come to your classes because I thought I needed to get fit for them, or you know, I didn't choose you as a trainer or a coach because I'm kind of overweight, they were overweight or whatever it is, and I didn't think that, I felt a bit intimidated by you. And then I'm teaching these IMU food classes, people are like, oh, but that's not, I thought you'd be busting us, and you know, because of the way I look or some of the videos I post on Instagram using weights, and I like, you know, which is my personal training for me, but I wouldn't train somebody the way I train myself if they're not after the same goal as me. So I think you're right, perceptions are now becoming, actually, it's real world, you know, I've got roots, my eyelashes are falling out, my fake eyelashes. So there's another group of professionals that are going to be so busy after lockdown, hairdressers, eyelash technicians, and nail tech, for me, and manual therapists, I think, anything
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
It's
funny you say that about, you know, the exposure thing and the honesty thing. And it is very much a down to the individual person. I mean, you spoke there about, people not coming to your class because they perceive you being a certain way. Indoor cycling is really bad for that, because a lot of people see online, they think that it's drill instructor screaming and shouting, and you've got to come out absolutely soaking wet to get a solid workout. And that's the furthest thing away from what you'll ever get coming to my class, because I'm not a shouter, I'm a talker.
Yeah.
And somebody's actually said that to me about what I do, is that you talk us through this. When we're struggling, you just talk the right thing. You don't shout, you don't scream, you don't finger point or any of that kind of stuff. You just talk us through it. And so that, you know, that's the difference between, I think, the way it's going to go forward in any sphere of exercise, that people will want to find somebody that they can just align with. So if they find somebody who's a little bit pushy and a little bit punchy, then they'll back away very quickly. They'll go looking for the quiet, methodical, you know, down, calm type. And that, I think that's where we are definitely, you know, as movement specialists, because we're not screaming about it. We are cajoling people. We're talking to people. We're encouraging people. Just move. Just move.
And I think it's interesting you say that, because even from our perspective, sometimes, you know, I've gone and taught indoor cycling and covered classes, and I'm going in worried that actually I should be, they're expecting me to be like the other instructor, and that's what they want. And if I don't do that, they won't like my class.
Mm-hmm.
So also being able to see what other people do and think, well, actually, you know, or like you, I mean, I will do what I know is the right thing to do, and I don't just, you know, sort of slam it out there. It's trying to educate them whilst we're cycling, keep it low here, you know, we're just going to gradually raise the heart rate. And there might be bits where we do work really hard, but kind of it's the education piece that's threaded through it rather than just like rah, 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 all the way through.
Yep.
And yet I still have a concern about my class being enjoyed if it's not like their regular instructors. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, being honest about that as well, about, you know, I know what I'm capable of, I know what I'm talking about, but actually that just being liked and sort of getting the exposure out there of people seeing the real you, I think it's warming to know actually people like differences. And so I think that's where we as biomechanics coaches, army food instructors, movement specialists, spinning instructors, it's just having confidence to do what you know is the right thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, you've got to find your own natural rhythm, your own natural place in this whole big wide world that's out there in terms of fitness. Some people are very, very good at that. They go diving straight in there, they find their niche and they go for it. Other people have to just find their way in. They take little baby steps and they get confident, they take more and get more confident and more and more. You know, that's what makes us honest. You know, we are just the same as the people that we want to work with. When they've got concerns about their exercise or their diet or the way that they move, or even perhaps it can be something as simple as walking in through that front door when they come to see you. Yeah. You're exactly right. We are the same on the opposite side. When that person walks through that door, are they going to like me? Are they going to gel with me? Are they going to take on board the things that I can help them with? Or are they going to dismiss them as you say that. But, you know, that we have these things because we are human and we want to do well. You know, we want to do well for that person or group that we're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of your experience when you did your case studies, because I know you're not a biomechanics coach full time, so it's different for you, maybe some of the other guys I've spoken to, maybe in relation to your case studies or anybody you speak to, what do you think are common misconceptions about what we do as biomechanics coaches, or even just the term biomechanics and how it relates to maybe, I don't know, postural assessment, or what are the common misconceptions that you come across, if any, and how do you explain that?
I was quite lucky. I didn't really get too much of it, but some people still believe biomechanics is all about looking at people and looking how they run and how they walk. Yeah. And then you go and you give them and you make changes to what they do and that makes them a better runner or whatever. Whereas when I was doing my case studies and I was sitting down and explaining with the people who agreed to come along and be the study, it's like, you know, what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be going through a series of assessments with you. They're all very light, they're very light touch. What we'll then do is we'll then go through with it together. We'll talk about the whole thing after we've done it. We'll see if there's anything there that we can use that we might be able to help you move a little bit better than perhaps you currently are. It's a two-way thing. I can do this with you, but then I'm going to give you some homework to do. And you've got to buy into that homework, because, you know, if you want to see something from it, then you have to go through with the exercises that we do. And all of the people were quite happy to do that. They didn't sort of, okay, you know, most of them. One of the girls was a bit crazy, but I was just her. She was just a young girl and tripped over a tennis net one Saturday night when she was out. Don't ask. So the misconceptions, I think, strangely, are perhaps in the fitness world with fitness professionals,
yeah,
rather than the public. Because if I was to say to somebody, okay, I'm a biomechanics coach and I'm all about your movement, I'm interested in how you move and, you know, what is it you like to do? I'm a dancer, I like to dance. And so you're finding that difficult. Yeah, not as young as I used to be. I don't really do it as much as I used to. Okay, but there's nothing to stop you doing that if you want to do it. You can move. And if you want me to sit down with you, we can chat about, you know, what it is that you find is a barrier to you doing that. We can look at your biomechanics, how you actually move, and see if there's something there that we can give you a way that helps you to pick up that dancing and go back and do it again a little bit better than you have been doing. And people are fine with that. Talk about biomechanics to fitness professionals, and they're talking about running. Oh yeah, so it's all about running gait and stuff like that. No, that's one side of biomechanics, but that's not the side of biomechanics that I'm interested in. I'm interested in about how you move and how your body how your body allows you to move based on what's going on inside it. And so from that, they sort of go, oh, all right, well, whatever, does that work? Aha, let me show you. And then, you know, and off we go. And it's always the fitness professionals that have the misconceptions, I would say.
I think you're right. I think you're a skilled, you know, wordsmith. You explain things well. I think clients are just coming to us for a solution, whereas fitness professionals are kind of like, oh, well, what does a biomechanics coach do? Because there's a potential for them to maybe go down that route. So I always find it interesting that they're usually the ones that, oh, I don't know what the word, I was going to say clash with, we don't clash with them, but there's confusion about what we do. And the idea that we fix people, we're like physios. Well, no, we're not, but there's roots in physio, but it isn't physio. But in fact, it's completely different to physio because we're legally not allowed to diagnose and treat. So, you know, it was just that difference of the client perspective. I found interesting what you've just said, because I think you're right. But I mean, it is also down to our marketing and the way we do things. So, which is a challenge when you're a bit different, I think. So, I've got loads of questions for you, Stevie, but I'm aware of the time. So, in terms of books, do you read books? Have you got a book recommendation? Are you a bit nerdy like that?
Yes, I am nerdy. I listen to books. Thanks to your good self, you got me into Audible books. Yeah, absolutely, and I absolutely love it. And I'm trying to think of the first books that I listened to. Katie Bowman, yeah. So a couple of Katie's books.
Or I'm on her, I'm going right back to the beginning of her podcasts, and I'm on number 20 now, in the last 4 days.
Yeah. I found her books really interesting.
20, 30, 40 minute podcasts. Brilliant. And it's like I could listen to her all day. So I'm a fan of Katie Bowman. In fact,
I've books got are really good.
I've got really gushy about her again.
Katie
Bowman, yeah.
I got listening to Dan John as well on the sort of strength conditioning side. I've listened to a little bit of Gray Cook.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I have got both Back Mechanic and Ultimate Back and Performance, I think it's the other one. The legend that is Stu McGill. Yeah. I've actually lent them out.
They're hard copies, right? They're not on Audible, are they?
No, they're hard copies. And actually, one of the biomechanics, Sharon, has got those. I lent them to her. And the book that I've recently read, which is I've been waiting to read it for an absolute age, Explain Pain.
Oh, another
great book.
Yeah,
Lorimer Moseley. My goodness, zing! What a book! It just opens your eye. I mean, I've been doing a lot of pain science reading over the last wee while. A lot of Ben Cormack, and I'm in the Better Clinician Project, which is a little website that him and a guy called Adam Meekins have set up. They're physios and multi-skeletal guys as well, but they also just talk about things in general. But yeah, I have been so wanting to get hold of Explain Pain and read it, and I have, and it was just like, wow. And I know that you know, as biomechanics coaches, predominantly we won't address people's pain in that way. But I think that if we have an understanding of how they see their pain in relation to how they move, it would definitely help us as biomechanics coaches in how we actually interact with them, because it's such an important thing.
It's so powerful, really. When I think it was Peter O'Sullivan's video on YouTube with a client called Jack,
yes,
which I haven't shown you, but Mike may have shown you. And
I've watched that last night.
Just teaching somebody how their pain works, and their pain goes away or down. That alone, you know, the idea that Mosley and Butler talk about is an input, not an output. So, I mean, you've just reeled off some of my favourite books, and I think Katie Bowman, Explain Pain, and Stuart McGill's. Oh, I'm a book nerd. All of them. I love all. Yeah, I mean, they're in my top ream, because I'd say top three, but I'm sure there's going to be others as well. And Dan John, mm-hmm. Intervention.
Yes, yes.
So, and I had his series, and then I listened to two or three, maybe four of his books. I can't remember what he's done now. But yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think you're right. I said it's our job to educate a client what their pain is. Inevitably now, even as personal trainers, biomechanics coaches, we're getting clients who experience pain. And I think the difference between pain, discomfort, sensation, tension, tightness, it all comes under one umbrella, which is sensation. And so I'm trying to use that now as well. Is it's just another sensation, and the degree of pain you feel is not necessarily indicative of the amount of pathology going on, particularly in chronic pain, is really where we where we focus. But I'm with you on those. Okay, so in terms of what you do, what I normally do at this point at the end of the sort of interview, Stevie, is I get the biomechanics coach to say, where can people find you? Is that relevant for you? I guess it is.
Yeah,
I
mean,
you can watch this. So where can people find you? Are you sort of, do you have your own website for your fitness stuff?
Don't have a website, but I have a Facebook page, which is called Fit Through Life. So that's Fit and then THRU Life, and there's an Instagram page with the same name, and people can find me there. Contact details are on the page, or both of them actually. So I've got an email, I've got a phone number there, I post up things that interest me. I post up things from the good self, things from people that we work with, people like Ben Coomer, Mike Dreiss, Chris Kitson, some of the master trainers.
I know you're a Stephen H fan.
that was again another defining moment for me, which came about from being involved in biomechanics, was getting to sit in front of Stephen H for what, 20 minutes, something like that, half an hour maybe, and totally blown me away, completely blew me away with what he did. I've got a lot to thank biomechanics for. It took me from a little bit of knowledge to in a sort of a general thing, if you like, to a whole wide world of fitness, pain, nutrition, movement, exercise, understanding people. The subjects are just get wider and wider and wider the deeper in that you go, and I think I have absolutely no doubt about it, in fact, that it's made me a better person, a better coach, and it will make me a better coach going forward, because you get to realize very, very quickly that there is so much to learn. There is so much to learn. You know, if you think you know it all, then stop and go do something else. There is so much to learn.
It never ends.
No.
But we love it, and we love having you on the team, Stevie. So hopefully when we're let out again, either I'll be up or you'll be down, and we can
definitely
meet up and have a chin wag. So, yeah. But no, much appreciated. Thank you so much for your time. I'm going to put this up. So who knows who's going to watch it? We can, we'll find out, I guess. But it'll be up on YouTube and then people can make comments. And hopefully I'll see you soon. But stay safe and take care in this current climate, mate. Nice to see you.
See ya. Bye, Rachel.
Take care. Bye.
See ya.